And now it's time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Would suggest that you have a pencil and paper handy, because there might be a address, location, web page, something that you might want to remember later. And unless you get your smartphone out and you can type into it right away, maybe a pencil and paper would be a handy thing to have. Let's start off with announcements. The Alameda Creek Alliance Spring Creek Cleanup is going to be happening on Saturday, May 31st. Let me tell you, I've had to correct this announcement several ways. It is Saturday, May 31st. Help us clean up trash from known trout spawning habitat along Stony Creek. That's over in the East Bay from 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. They'll meet at the dirt road at mile marker 8.75 on Palomares Road, about a mile up from Niles Canyon. There's a clue for you. It's a dirt turnout on the right as you come up the canyon, and adopt a spot sign at this location. Please bring clothes that can get dirty, gloves if you have them. They'll have some gloves if you need them. And sturdy shoes or boots are recommended. This is a steep, rugged location. If you don't feel comfortable on uneven ground, this event is not for you. We start at 10:30 and go until 12:30, or until all the trash is removed. Please be aware that parking is limited at this site, so please carpool if you can. If you have any questions, or if you want to RSVP, and it's recommended, please email Ralph at alamedacreek.org. That's Ralph at alamedacreek.org. And you can also go to their website, www.alamedacreek.org. To get there, if you're in the Pleasanton, East Bay, Over the Hills area, get to Niles Canyon Road, go 4 miles down the canyon from the town of Sanol, turn right on Palomares Road, go up a mile, dirt turnout on the right. From Fremont and Niles, go up Niles Canyon Road, 2 miles from Mission Boulevard, turn left on Palomares Road, and a mile up the canyon, dirt turnout, yeah, that's right, on the right. Once again, this Saturday, May 31st, 10 a.m. to 12:30, or until the trash is picked up. Energy Exports Action Camp is next week in Maryland, if you happen to be out that way. Chesapeake Earth First is putting this on. If you have a distaste for mountaintop removal, the practice of turning mountains into molehills, some of the oldest mountains in the world, by the way, into moonscapes, blowing them up bit by bit to get at the coal they have inside, poisoning the ecosystems, communities downstream with slurry and sediment, and the air with carbon dioxide. Hey, folks, we reached 400 parts per million this month. What about fracking, where the wells are typically cased in concrete? Falls apart after a while. But they pump millions of gallons of water, sand, and highly toxic chemicals deep into the ground, horizontally extend up to a mile or more, and forever poison any water source that it comes in contact. How do you feel about train derailments and pipeline spills? Well, exports. That's what's happening. This is why Chesapeake Earth First is working with activists from all over the region to host an Energy Exports Action Camp June 2nd through 9th in Prince George's County, Maryland. And if you want to find out how to get there, go to energyexportactioncamp.wordpress.com. That's Energy Exports with an S, actioncamp.wordpress.com. And sounds like they're going to be camping in a beautiful rural location. Might have toilets. And then from June 2nd to the 6th, and then from the 6th to the 9th, they're moving urban. So check them out once again. EnergyExportsActionCamp.wordpress.com, or you can write us at EnergyExportsCamp@riseup.net. That should be a kind of an interesting gathering. And the Earth First Climbers Guild Climbing Camp, June 16th through the 22nd, up in the Wisconsin Midwest. Southeastern Minnesota, southwestern Wisconsin. They're going to teach you how to climb, how to ascend a rope and descend the rope. That's a good thing to know. Once you get high, it's always wise to come down. How to set an anchor, platform rigging, pod structures, and then they're going to go out and use it all. So Pretend you're going to be camping. You'll need a sleeping bag, tent, rain gear, appropriate clothing for a buggy Minnesota June, climbing shoes, anything with a stiff sole, gloves, pants you can climb comfortably in, your own climbing gear if you have it, not required. Food. Definitely need food. Something vegan, probably appreciated. Don't bring that half slab of bacon. And bring a few bucks. They want $20 to $50. However, no one will be turned away for lack of funds. Leave your dog at home. Leave your drugs at home. Leave your bad attitude at home. They'll provide knowledgeable trainers, climbing gear, a full kitchen. And if you want to check it all out, go to efclimbers.net. That's efclimbers.net. And once again, the camp is June 16th through the 22nd up in the Midwest. And to top it all off, the 2014 Earth First Round River Rendezvous is going to be taking place somewhere in Southern Oregon, Northern California. I saw some hints about where it might be, but it hasn't been nailed down. But anyway, the Round River Rendezvous is coming July 1st through the 7th to the Western Oregon-California border region. Lots of stuff is happening around, and so, you know, get involved. Hosted by a coalition of activists from around various places in the West. Anyway, the directions should be available in a few weeks. If you've never been to a Rondi before, come expecting fireside songs and stories, hikes in the wilderness, workshops. We don't like to work and we don't like to shop, so where the hell are we having a workshop? Group meals, friendship, and all kinds of rowdiness. Cascadia loves to party, and they have great beer. And we can't wait to host. For the Wild and Rowdy, the 2014 Round River Rendezvous Organizing Crew directs you to www.2014rrr.org. That's www.2014rrr.org. And in the news, Greenpeace protesters have boarded a Statoil Arctic drilling rig. In this story reported by Gladys Fuchs, Balaz Korani, with editing by Greg Mollich and Ruth Pitchford of World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Greenpeace activists boarded an oil rig in the Norwegian Arctic on Tuesday to try and stop exploration plans in the far north, and Norwegian police say that they are powerless to intervene until the drilling starts. The Statoil rig, which was registered in the Marshall Islands, is in international waters some 23 nautical miles offshore from the planned drilling site in the Barents Sea. As long as drilling does not begin, Norwegian police have no jurisdiction. When the rig is in motion, it is considered a ship. When the rig begins to drill, it is considered a rig on the Norwegian continental shelf. Then we can safeguard Norwegian oil and gas interests, Ole Sverud, chief of police for the Troms Police District in northern Norway, told Reuters. He declined to say what action police are may be preparing. Norwegian Coast Guard currently has one vessel near the rig. Statoil, which is owned by the Norwegian state, denounced Greenpeace's actions as illegal and irresponsible. Greenpeace, which regularly calls Statoil an Arctic aggressor, said plans to drill in the Hoop area of the Barents Sea threatened Bear Island, an uninhabited wildlife sanctuary, which is home to rare species and occasional polar bears. Oil firms are drilling further north in Norway than ever as the Arctic ice retreats, and recent regulation changes let firms work in areas where winter ice was common just decades ago. Statoil said it was unclear when normal operations would resume. We can't say anything about when we could be up and running, company spokesman Orjan Ferzveit told Reuters. Greenpeace climbed the rig owned by Transocean in the early morning hours, hung banners such as No Arctic Oil and Stop Statoil's Arctic Race, and said they were prepared to stay on the rig for days. There are 15 activists on board. Some are attached to the outer structure of the rig. Some are on board the rig. Greenpeace Norway chief Truls Gullvåsen told Reuters, "Everything is very calm. Statoil has offered for the activists to be moved to shore, and we have said no thanks." Statoil said it was very worried about the safety of the activists. Some of them have chained themselves underneath the deck. The temperature is 2 degrees Celsius, about 36 Fahrenheit. Earlier today, said Statoil's Herzveit, they could fall in the water under the propeller. The move by Greenpeace comes just weeks after the group unsuccessfully tried in Rotterdam to block the delivery of Russia's first oil from its Perestroika oil platform in the Arctic Petjora Sea. The platform was briefly occupied by Greenpeace activists last year, just before they were all arrested by Russian military forces and charged with piracy, carrying a potential prison term of decades, but they were released under an amnesty initiated by President Vladimir Putin. Statoil rejected Greenpeace's claims about safety. Hoop is an area with known geology, low pressures and temperatures, and where Statoil has robust plans for operations. An oil spill is very unlikely. At the same time, we have put in place a number of barriers to be able to handle the situation should it occur, the company said. The rig is currently in transit to the Hoop area, where it has permission to start drilling in the Apollo prospect. However, it cannot drill into oil-bearing rock because of a complaint from Greenpeace is pending. And here's the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field for this week. Our patrol set up across the Madison River to document the government's resumed hazing operation that began in Yellowstone National Park the day before. In this group of buffalo was a radio-colored female, numbered H4, who had started to give birth near Cougar Knoll when agents were hazing her on the previous day. Rather than halting the haze immediately upon discovering this buffalo was in labor, the agents actually deliberated whether or not to continue. They did decide to leave that day and return in less than 24 hours. Resuming the haze of this group of 60 brown buffalo and 30 red calves, including the newborn, government agents on horseback pushed them across Cougar Knoll through a lodgepole trail over the ridge and down across the swollen Madison River. Mama H4's calf could not withstand the strong current no matter how hard she tried. Simultaneously, during the crossing, another calf was separated from its mother and was seen running upriver amidst the hazing operations trying to find her. The mother of this calf, who seemed to be a relative, maybe grandmother of H4, was visibly distraught over the separation from her own baby. When Grandma saw Mama H4 and her newborn was struggling, she swam back to assist. This grandma buffalo, who was doubly agitated by losing her own calf and seeing her relative left behind, crossed the river again and began running up and down the riverbank, sounding guttural bellows, shaking and sweeping her head, while park rangers called out to nearby tourists to get back in your vehicles. Mama H4 then started to cross the river again, calling for her calf to follow, and despite her guttural bellows of encouragement, the baby couldn't do it. Grandma then swung back across the river to find both Mama H4 and her calf, who had hidden behind a rock. Once again, the grandma buffalo swam the river, distressed at having to choose, took off full speed, running to catch up with the buffalo that were being harassed by agents upriver, where her calf was searching for her. Alerted by all the commotion, a coyote came trotting by to investigate the newborn and Mama H4. He walked on after Mama H4 stood guard tail up over her tired calf. Shortly after, four agents on horseback came back to view their handiwork. Having not found her calf upriver, the grandma buffalo came raging back to the scene, shaking her head, calling to Mama H4 and her calf, and swam the river again. After checking on Mama H4 and her calf, Grandma then moved through the tree line towards the agents on horseback, who then retreated back up and over the ridge. Another patrol reported agents yelling to get back as the grandma buffalo came to haze them away. Despite all of her pleading and encouragement, Mama H4 could just not bring her calf to swim the river. Less than a day old and under stress by government agents pursuing her, the exhausted calf collapsed on the riverbank with Mama H4 nearby. The next day, a park ranger reported to Buffalo Field Campaign that Mama H4 and her newborn calf did finally make it across the Madison River. They were last seen migrating upriver to rejoin their family group. We don't know if Grandma found her baby again, but the bond between mom and calf is very strong, and it takes a long time before either will give up the search. The Buffalo Field Campaign has a website. It's www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. If you want to send them something, check on the webpage for what they need, and then send it to Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana. The zip up there is 59758. If you have any questions, give them a call. Area code 406-646-0070. Getting ahead of myself again. That's 406-646-0070. I know exactly where that phone is, and they're happy to answer it. Once again, for this and all information, go to www.buffalofieldcampaign.org, and do remember that the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And nesting eagles have been harassed by helicopter logging in this story by Kimberly Baker of the Environmental Protection Information Center. Last week, the Klamath National Forest took a calculated risk to knowingly harass a pair of bald eagles and their babies with helicopter logging just 1,500 feet from their nest. Logging this close to a nest occurred continuously for over a week and is expected to continue in this general area. A Happy Camp, California resident who has been observing this pair raising their young every year for the past 24 years alerted Epic last week. The adult eagles have shown very erratic behavior and have been heard screeching in distress every day logging has occurred. We contacted the ranger, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the wildlife biologist to understand why and by what legal authority allowed the Klamath National Forest to risk killing the nestlings. Although there were limited operation periods designated and put in place to protect the nestlings, logging was taking place just outside of a bald eagle management area set up for this particular nest site. Eagles are no longer listed under the Endangered Species Act, but are still protected by the Bald Eagle Protection Act, which can bring criminal and civil penalties for any person or organization taking or disturbing them. A violation of the act can result in a criminal fine of $100,000, $200,000 for organizations, imprisonment for a year or both for a first offense. Management recommendations from the 2007 Bald Eagle Management Plan does allow some level of disturbance and is very lenient. Because of the public outcry and immediate attention from our organization, the Happy Camp Ranger District has a wildlife biologist monitoring the nest during logging activity. The biologist has seen one nestling, and eagles are still tending to their babies. Disruptive activities in or near eagle foraging areas can interfere with feeding, reducing chances of survival for the nestlings. Young nestlings are particularly vulnerable because they rely on their parents to provide food, warmth, and shade, without which they may die as a result of hypothermia or heat stress. If food delivery schedules are interrupted, the young may not develop healthy plumage, which can affect their survival. Interference with feeding can also result in reduced productivity, the number of young successfully fledged. Older nestlings no longer require constant attention from the adults, but they may be startled by loud or intrusive human activities and prematurely jump from the nest before they are able to fly and care for themselves. Once fledged, juveniles range up to a quarter of a mile from the nest site, often to a site with minimal human activity. During this period, until about 6 weeks after departure from the nest, juveniles still depend upon adults to feed them. Where a human activity agitates or bothers roosting or foraging bald eagles to the degree that causes injury or substantially interferes with breeding, feeding, or sheltering behavior and causes, or is likely to cause the loss of productivity or nest abandonment, the conduct of the activity constitutes a violation of the Eagle Act's prohibition against disturbing eagles. If observations show that the logging has resulted in any of these negative impacts, EPIC will look into pressing charges for violations of the Bald Eagle Protection Act. If you'd like more information about EPIC, go to www.wildcalifornia.org. That's www.wildcalifornia.org. And locals attack a nickel mine, burn machines, shoot at cops after an effluent spill in New Caledonia. And this from the Papua New Guinea Mine Watch, Reuters, South China Morning Post, Radio New Zealand, and the Earth First Newswire. Dozens of protesters have caused tens of millions of dollars in damage to vehicles, equipment, and buildings at a nickel mining site in New Caledonia as anger boiled over at a chemical spill into a local river. The $6 billion Vale plant at Goro in southern New Caledonia was closed this month after 100,000 liters of acid-tainted effluent spilled, killing about 1,000 fish and sparking protests at the mine site. The Vale plant had been expected to produce about 40,000 tons of nickel this year, out of global supply of around 2 million tons, but it has been beset by problems including spills and protests. Tensions between the local population and Brazil-based Vale escalated over the weekend, with young protesters frustrated at the latest spill and a lack of response from indigenous Kanak chiefs, according to local media reports. Television footage showed images of burned mining vehicles and equipment. "We had burned vehicles. One administration building was damaged, but no damage to the plant itself," Vale spokesman Corey McPhee said. Peter Papinga, an executive director at Vale, told Les Nouvelles Caledoniennes newspaper that damage to the mining site was estimated at least $20 million to $30 million, including destruction of perhaps one-third of their truck fleet. "If there is no activity for several months, we will shut the plant, but that's not the case. The closing of the plant is not on the table," Papinga was quoted as saying. The French Pacific Territory's southern provincial government ordered an immediate halt to operations and started legal proceedings under its environmental code after the spill. The local government, which had a leadership change last week, has yet to say when Vale can resume production. The New Caledonian police say while clashes near Noumea with young Kanaks opposed to the nearby Vale nickel plant have eased, it is likely more unrest is to come. The youths are calling for the plant, which has been closed for 3 weeks after an acid spill, to be closed for good. About 150 riot police with armored vehicles have been trying to permanently reopen a key road south of Noumea, which was first blocked on Saturday when the unrest started. Three police officers have suffered gunshot wounds during the clashes. A police officer says the situation is now stable and the road is open, but he says Kanak youths involved might try to block the road again during the night. "During the night, we had some tension, and we had some young teenagers blocking the road. This morning, we have had some forces conduct some operations in order to free the road, and for the time being, the situation is calm." The police officer says they are yet to make any arrests for the shootings and injuring of police officers. And South Africa has lost its first elephant to poachers in a decade. In this story reported by Zandi Shabala, editing by Olivia Kumwenda Mimtabo, from World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. An elephant bull was purposely shot for its tusks by four suspected poachers at the Kruger National Park in eastern Mpumalanga Province, Sands Parks said in a statement. Elephant poaching has been a problem for the rest of Africa, while poaching in South Africa has been largely confined to rhinos, with more than 1,000 rhinos killed for their horns last year. "If we compare the situation in Africa, our concentration has been on rhinos. We need now to refocus our attention," Sands Park spokesperson Reynold Takuli said. Evidence suggesting the tusks were heading for neighboring Mozambique as the incident took place on the northern part of the vast national park, he added. The demand for ivory and rhino horn in East Asia is thought to be fueling the poaching. Rhino horn can fetch as much as $65,000 a kilogram on the black market, making it more expensive than gold, platinum, and cocaine. A nickel mine for the headwaters of California's Smith River, in this story by AP from the Earth First Newswire. Residents of Del Norte County in the upper reaches of California fear what may happen if a company based in London follows through on plans to mine nickel along the Smith River tributaries. The Smith is the last major California river without a dam, the San Francisco Chronicle reported, and it is a passageway for spawning fish as well as a source of drinking water for local residents. Locating a strip mine at the headwaters of the wild and scenic Smith River is like putting ice cubes made with toxic waste in your favorite drink, said Grant Werskel, executive director of the Smith River Alliance in Crescent City. It's completely outrageous. The mining firm, Red Flat Nickel Corporation, has asked the U.S. Forest Service permission to begin exploratory drilling on thousands of acres of land along Baldface Creek across the state line in Oregon. Baldface Creek is a tributary of the Smith, which runs into California. An attorney for Red Flat couldn't be reached for comment, the newspaper reported. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency says hard rock mining is the largest source of toxic pollution in the country. Opposition to mining has come from politicians, homeowners, fishermen, environmental groups, and American Indian tribes, each with their own worries. Trying to put a major mine in the middle of the headwaters of any major salmon river is a recipe for disaster, said Glenn Spann of the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations. It's astonishing that this kind of thing still happens. Crescent City draws its drinking water from the river, and city manager Eugene Palazzo said he's monitoring the mining firm's plans. Those opposing the mining say they feel powerless. Laws written following California's gold rush may prevent them from stopping the foreign venture. The General Mining Act of 1872 gives mining companies near free rein to stake claims and begin digging, the newspaper says. Groups have begun reaching out to political leaders to apply pressure. Yet Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest spokeswoman Virginia Gibbons said mining is years off for the firm that made its initial application in October of 2012. It's a plan for operation for exploratory drilling, Gibbons says. It doesn't mean there's going to be a mine there. And island lizards and island geese, two breaking success stories. Two endangered species from different Pacific islands were in the media for their remarkable recovery under the auspices of the Endangered Species Act. Hawaiian geese, called Nene, and island night lizards, which live off the coast of Southern California. Biologists recently found a breeding pair of Nene, the state bird of Hawaii and the world's rarest goose, nesting in Oahu, where they hadn't been seen for hundreds of years. Common on the islands during the time of Captain Cook's explorations in 1778, the geese had been reduced to a population of only 30 by 1952. Conservation and breeding programs have brought their number up to about 2,000, mostly on the island of Kauai, since they were protected in 1967 under a precursor of the Endangered Species Act. Further east on California's Channel Islands, island night lizards were declared recovered due to decades of protective measures carried out under the Endangered Species Act since 1977. There are now more than 21 million of these lizards thriving on the islands, rescued by a recovery plan effort that focused on removal of the imported pigs and goats that were tearing up the lizards' habitat. The Endangered Species Act has enabled not only the survival of hundreds of endangered species, but also some spectacular recoveries. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is produced every Thursday evening, right here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. The Earth First Update can be heard again tomorrow afternoon here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 3 p.m. Or, if you happen to live in Moscow, Idaho, tune in to KRFP, Radio Free Moscow, at 90.3 FM, their new high-power frequency, on Monday nights at 9:30. You can also download or listen online at radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, forall.net. And I would like to encourage you to please support radioforall.net. It's been a place where independent program producers are able to upload and download programs. And they're a completely do-it-yourself digital storage place. And they've been instrumental in distributing stories such as the Earth First Update and many other programs for a number of years. But recently they suffered financial setback, and it's time for you to support them. So go to radioforall.net and click on the banner on the top or the little star and send some bucks their way. They really need it. They've been really great. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Well, thank you for listening. Do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.